The following segment is a paid commercial program by Christensen PLLP. It's time for Ask the Expert on News Talk 1340 KWLM.
And here he is, right on schedule, Joel Gratz, a partner with Christensen PLLP and a certified public accountant as well, joining us. And it's our Ask the Expert program. And Joel, I believe you're in for one more month yet too, right? In April, is that right? Get that correct?
Yep, unless you know something I don't, but that was the plan, that we'd come back in one more time in April, you bet.
Yeah. Well, I imagine it's a very busy time at the firm right now. This is what they pay you to do, and that's make sure that people are in businesses are getting their returns filed and everything is correct, and therefore you're always trying to get the best deal you can for those that obviously you're serving as well too. But it's kind of the old saying, there are two certainties, and we all know what those are: death and taxes, right?
Death and taxes. Yeah. No, we've been working pretty hard, Bill, over at the office. We got the farmer deadline done, which is this year was March 2nd, normally March 1st. That went a lot better than last year because software is better, and we know the tax code better. And it's still unfortunate that the farmer returns are the most complicated, probably generally speaking, and we get to do them first. And we have to basically get it done in 2 weeks because all the K-1s and the 1099s and all that stuff just never quite get there by that, January 31st timeline. So it takes a lot of effort, and pretty proud of my team for as smoothly as this year went. And so that's good. Now we're focusing on the business returns, the S-Corps, and the partnership tax returns. Those are due this year, March 16th. So that's kind of our next big push right now. So it's just one deadline after another, and we keep knocking them down one day at a time.
And then the individuals will be about a month after that. April 17th is it this year, or is it
this year? It actually falls in the middle, April 15th. So the leap year helped us too, by the way. We had another day to get our farm deadline done, which is always a nice surprise for us, which is great to have a leap year in there. But yeah, April 15th, I think it falls on a Wednesday. So It in fact is the day. It's been a while since it's been April 15th with emancipation holidays and weekends and all that such. But it does fall on the 15th this year, right in the middle of the week.
And what percentage-wise would you say of your clients do you end up filing extensions for then? Is it a fairly large percentage, or are most of them ready to go and get in by the deadline?
I don't know if I have that off the top of my head, but I would say we probably extend about 10%.
Okay.
So we do get most of them done. 10% is still a big number, but there's a lot of reasons why we probably extend. Some people are still coming back from their wintering, and if it's Arizona, Florida, whatever, and just taking their time at it, have already paid their estimates, so it's really not in their mind a huge deal, and some people are scared to death to extend because they think it's an automatic red flag, and it's definitely not. If you extend, it's not a big deal with the IRS, so you don't get put on the naughty list, if you will, and then get a call 2 weeks later kind of thing. So it doesn't quite work that way, but about 10%, I'd say.
Yeah. And then another thing, and maybe this has been more recently because of kind of last minute changes and some of the things the government decides to do, and that is amended forms. I imagine you have a percentage of those every year too that you're amending from previous years and sending that information in. And how many years back can you go again? It's a ways back.
You can go 3 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, statute of limitations is 3 years where you can do an automatic amend on whatever that's allowable. Some things you can't go back and amend, but most you can. So we always say if something isn't quite right or something information comes up later, we generally can fix it, and go back and make the changes. So, and again, not a red flag, and we do that often when need be. So,
now, how much does the IRS, maybe if it's simple math or things like that, they often make the correction, don't they, if there is an error? And is that you're on the responsibility of the taxpayer?
Generally, how it goes is a client will get a letter and say, and the IRS will say, this is what we received. We're not matching it to your return. Is there a reason why? If there's no reason why, we've calculated the tax for you, please send a check accordingly. Mm-hmm. If you disagree, please provide your information as to why it's, you know, why your numbers are correct, and we'll ascertain whether or not we agree, and we'll let you know in about 3 to 4 months, and hopefully it all goes well. So that it happens where some mismatching happens, or, you know, last year with the software, the IRS's software wasn't quite ready, so there was a lot of letters that they were wrong. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, and we corrected them and told them why, and a lot of my clients came out just fine. Of course, it takes several months for that mm-hmm. whole process to start and end, but it usually goes to our favor, I would say. Mm-hmm. We feel pretty strongly about our work product, so hopefully, well, we've been wrong too. I mean, it's not like we're perfect, neither is the IRS, but that's kind of how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, something I know that pertains to you personally is claiming a college-age child on your taxes as a dependent, I'm assuming, is what you're talking about.
Are you referencing the fact that I have 4 children, Bill?
And I suppose about 3 of them are almost in college now.
You know,
I only
got 1 in college right now, and I got 2 still in high school.
Okay.
So, yeah, we got a lot of stuff there. But, you know, it's a topic, yeah, talking about when kids start going to college. It's often very confusing for the parent. Mm-hmm. And if a child has a job where they get some W-2 income, there's a lot of questions on that as well. And should I claim them? Should I not? And if they have income and they file their own tax return, some people think you can't take them anymore as a dependent. So there's a lot of questions on that. And like everything, you know, Bill, it depends on every situation. And I saw today, I just went through this weekend with a client on, should we take the credit? Should we not? There's a lot of things that go into different things, and the rules have changed with the new tax law. And I just wanted to take a few moments today to kind of go through that, thinking it might be really helpful for the listeners.
Because the credit is substantial, isn't it? I mean,
there's an education credit that can be very substantial, the American Opportunity Tax Credit, which has a refundable portion to it. The $1,000 of the maximum $2,500 in total credit is refundable. So that's it's a pretty powerful thing. But with that, parents can get phased out if they make too much money. So then you lose the $2,500 unless you do other things. And so there's a lot of, I'm not going to call it flexibility, but opportunities where if you do the right thing, you can get that credit to work for you. And you can only take the credit 4 years. A lot of like my son being a CPA, or going to be a CPA, my oldest, he's going 5 years because of the requirements to sit the exam. You have to go that long. So when you look at a 5-year program, do you take that opportunity credit the first year, or do you elect out and take the lifetime learning credit to save it when the dollars are bigger? Because usually that first year, it's just, you know, one semester, right? Where I ran into this issue where if I had known what I know today, I probably wouldn't have taken the credit that first year out of the box out of high school, you know, where it's a much smaller tuition. And plus, as tuition costs go up, your opportunity for a greater credit goes up every year. So I'm learning more that you might want to elect out and just take the lifetime learning credit is also good, but there's not a refundable portion to it. So, and it's not as big. That one maxes out at $2,000, whereas this one's $2,500. So, so that's the first thing that you think about when you're talking about maximizing credits. And now with the new tax law that we have now, our second year, the credit for students who graduate high school is only $500. So that's a child tax credit in addition to this education credit we were just talking about. And they took away personal exemptions. So before, you got a deduction for having children. No longer the case. So that's gone. On the federal side, there is a personal exemption for children on the Minnesota side. So there is some value there. So a lot of people feel that if I don't get to claim my child, I'm missing out on something big. And that's not as much, the dollars don't mean as much as they used to. So, you know, looking at the tax ramifications of claiming or not claiming a child, what it means for somebody who's got a 19-year-old son or daughter in college, let's take the education credit out of it for a second. It really ends up being $500 federal tax credit and a $4,250 personal deduction for that student in Minnesota, which if you just use a 7% bracket, that's a $300 value. Mm-hmm. So if you add the two together, it's only an $800 cost, if you will, to claim as a dependent versus not. Again, not taking in the education credit into play. So it's not as valuable as it used to be, and that's what a lot of people are maybe still thinking about. So if I suggest, you know, I think maybe your son or daughter should file independently this year, they're like, oh my gosh, I can't do that. I'm gonna miss out on thousands of dollars of opportunity, and it's really just not that big anymore.
So oftentimes then that student that is filing independently, they're going to get a refund, aren't they? Because normally their income isn't going to be that high.
Right. And with the new law, again, the standard deduction is so much higher. Mm-hmm. So now children who are working, whether they're in college or not, can make up to $12,000 federally and pay no income tax. Mm-hmm. You know, again, a W-2 earner working at a restaurant or, you know, working a labor job in the summer can make up to $12,000 and pay no tax. Mm-hmm. So in that case, you're right, they could get a $1,000 refundable credit if mom and dad are phased out because their income is too high, which at that level, it's about $180,000 when you are fully phased out. And if mom and dad are both working, that you sometimes get to that point where it gets pretty close to that, where that number, you start phasing out and you could lose out on the credit. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things to consider. And again, back to the higher standard deduction, if you are in a situation where mom and dad are self-employed and you want to fund college, a lot of times parents will pay their children wages and legitimate wages, get a deduction, and now with the $12,000 standard deduction, son or daughter's not paying any income tax. So that's a great tax shelter and a great way to fund some college, right? Well, at that point, if I only pay him $12,000, they're still not paying any income tax. So that credit that I'm talking about, the education credit, instead of being a $2,500 value, is only $1,000 because that's the only portion that's refundable back to the refund you mentioned, Bill. So then we talk about, do we pay him even more wages, potentially, to make that work, to get that credit so they have more tax to pay to maximize that credit? To complicate the matter, though, and you're going to say, well, I knew there was something else coming because it sounds almost too easy. When it comes to dependency, if a child has the ability to provide 50% or more of their support, which includes the food, the gas, the car, going to school, whatever, if it's more than 50%, then the IRS says, well, we might have to look at this, and they have to file themselves as an independent person. If they fall below that number, then in theory, it gets harder to justify to have them filing as independent. And if they don't live with you for greater than 6 months out of the year, it gets harder to claim them as a dependent. Now, when your child spends time at school, that does count as being at home. So, okay. Yeah, it's one thing. Another thing that people are like, well, they're never home. They're only home for 3 months. How can I claim them? Yeah. Well, the time at college is counted as if you were at home. So that helps out as well.
And that continues throughout, like, say, the 4 years then? Is that so that even though that, say, they, you know, wouldn't graduate until 22 or whatever, that wouldn't matter then? It could still be...
Right. And the rule is if your child is going to school, they have up until their age 24 for this option for mom and dad to claim them and still look at the dependency, look at where they're living, look at the support. All those things still need to be factored into the analysis. But you have that option if they are a full-time student up till the age 24. Okay. So where it starts getting gray or hazy is, well, what happens if my son or daughter wants to take a year off? Mm-hmm. And start working, and they're over 19 years old. School's not working for them. They want to take a break. Great. They go and work in the full-time, you know, workforce. At that moment, more than likely, you can't claim that child anymore. Mm-hmm. But if they go back to school and they're still under 24, you can go back. So this isn't once my son or daughter claims their independence, if you will, on a tax perspective, it's not lifetime. So you can go back and forth because it's a circumstance and an annual decision that is made to go through this. So there's a lot of considerations to make. And the biggest thing is to make sure mom and dad are coordinating with son or daughter. Many times you mentioned the refund. Mm-hmm. College kids are like, God, I need the cash. I'm going to Orlando this weekend for spring break. I got to get some, you know, hard cash in my hand. I want to file my taxes. So I'm going to Google this thing. I'm going to go online, get TurboTax, file it, and answer all these questions with a blindfold on. And then somehow they maybe answer the question wrong, and they mess up the whole plan. So, you know, out there for people who are listening, if you have kids who want to, you know, get that refund, exercise caution because you still need to coordinate all these events to make them really maximize the value for the family. You got to make sure you do both. And I often, even though that return isn't very complicated to do for the child, I strongly encourage that you, the same CPA kind of works together to make sure all the bells and whistles and all the buttons are being pushed in accordance and are kind of, you know, working together. So we get this credit to work out to its best.
One other question you mentioned about paying your, you know, your, I guess, child. What is the age? Is there, I mean, how old do they have to be before you can pay them wages? I mean, you hear about, you know, kids getting allowances or something, but to where if you wanted to try to, you know, start paying them, I guess, you know, is there an age area there?
That's a great question. There is nothing in tax code that has an age like limit requirement, has to be a certain age. It comes down to facts and circumstances and being reasonable and mm-hmm. being consistent with, I mean, if, you know, can a two-year-old do any work in your job or your business? Probably not, right? At what age does that start? That's going to depend upon your student. I know as a farm boy, I was doing things
probably at 12 years old. I mean,
I was going to say 9, 10, 11. Yeah. You know, you're doing stuff that maybe today it'd be frowned upon, but in the old days, that's just what you did. If you were driving truck in the field or driving tractor out in the field, you could barely see over the steering wheel, but that's what you did, you know? Mm-hmm. And, well, that's legitimate, right? You're actually doing something. Easy thing to justify whether you're of legal age to drive or not. You know, that's the kind of things that work. So it's really a fact and facts and circumstances, Bill, where that kind of comes into play. And the dollar amounts, too, have to be realistic, right?
Yeah.
You can't pay your 12-year-old daughter who's maybe cleaning my office or she's answering the phone. Let's say, I'm just trying to give examples here. You can't pay that person $100,000. You know, I mean, that's not a legitimate compensation on an arm's length basis, right? So you have to really, not only is age, you know, a concern, it's what they're doing, and it's also, you know, what would you have to pay someone who wasn't related to you
exactly
in the open market? So all those things kind of play into it, you know, and even going a step farther back to it's a great way to fund college if you're paying your kid. Well, now they have earned income, and then they could start contributing to IRAs if they wanted to, and Roth IRAs, so money can grow tax-free. And if they go to college, that money can come out tax-free. And a lot of times when it comes to financial aid, those retirement accounts may or may not be includable as an asset because it's available, but they can't force you to take your retirement either mm-hmm. to pay that. So there's a lot of strategic things to do. So when you're self-employed, have kids who are legitimately doing some work for you, it really opens up a whole lot of different things that could be asked, could be done, for the sake of the betterment of maximizing tax credits, maximizing tax brackets, maximizing retirement contributions. The list goes on and on, and that's kind of the beauty of, you know, working with a professional. I would never expect anybody who would want to do their own taxes to figure all these rules out by themselves. Not that there aren't folks out there who can do it, but it's a matter of time and function and just, you know, getting practice at it to know kind of what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, that's a great point you made about those IRAs, though, too. I wouldn't have thought of that, you know, that wouldn't qualify if you're trying to get some, you know, some aid, you know, that money is separate and, you know, it's a very good vehicle, it sounds like. So
it's better to be in a Roth versus a savings account, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, when it comes to parents' assets versus students' assets, the students' assets are weighted heavier in the whole formula. And right now, I don't remember the exact percentages off the top of my head. I wasn't prepared to speak to that exactly, but I want to say, you know, the students' assets are at least 4 to 5 times heavier weighted, mm-hmm. whatever that ratio is, versus mom and dad's assets. So there's things you do before they go to college and you buy the car with their savings account. I mean, there's things to do to maximize the financial aid, which could be a whole other discussion for another day.
Right.
I know a lot of parents out there are going through that process right now to get their FAFSAs filled out and whatnot, which can be complicated in itself and scary, but that stuff is out there. So, yeah, long story short, Bill, there's just so many things to kind of work through to maximize and not to toot, you know, the CPA horn, but you know, if you really want to maximize the system, you got to know what you're doing. And we really feel as a CPA, that's where the value comes in, right? That's when, you know, some of the folks are just doing 1040s on the side just to have a little extra income, maybe or maybe not, doesn't know all those things, you know, and you kind of get what you pay for. And if you're getting CPA help, that's what we do. That's why we are, in our opinion, more valuable than others, is that we can bring this to the table for you and maximize all the credits and make sure Uncle Sam only gets what he's owed, you know?
Yeah, and it's going to be plenty anyway, right?
It's going to be plenty, yeah, right. Yeah. So that's the theme of the day, I guess, Bill, is to not assume anything and make sure the family's coordinating on who's doing taxes and who's filing what and who's a dependent of whom and making all these things kind of work for the family.
Yeah, well, I think it's very interesting. You've raised a lot of good information for people to take heed of, especially if you're in those circumstances. So
yeah.
Well, Joel, any other information before we let you go as to how people can best contact you or the firm down there at Christensen and Associates?
Well, the best way is just to give us a call at 320-235-5937, and one of our seasoned professionals will be able to sit down with you and get that kind of worked out for you.
And not only taxes, but many other, you know, you do many other services too. And one thing I know that I keep hearing about, succession planning, something that is so important that people, for some reason, because it's kind of like, you know, acknowledging the fact that you're not going to be here forever. But I mean, just trying to even pass on a business or something, it's a kind of complicated thing. And I think the earlier you can sit down and maybe get a professional to look at it, you know, clearly, and maybe not be emotionally attached. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, all parties will benefit in that too. So
it's a really hot topic. Where my firm is actually partnering with the EDC here of Kennewick County to put on a legacy seminar here in March. And I should have wrote the date down, and Melissa, not from my office, is going to shoot me. But I want to say it's March 24th or 26th, okay. And I know there's advertisements out there for that. Go to our website, christensencpa.com. I know it's there as well. And John Christensen and I are speaking to various topics, talking about succession, legacy, legacy planning, and different things. And there's just no one silver bullet on that topic. Mm-hmm. And it's a real intimate, can be nerve-wracking. You know, like you said, it's hard. And so we're going to start that process and have it available for the public there, again, partnering with the EDC.
Yeah. Well, it's a blessing, you know, to have something to hopefully pass on and to have somebody that wants it. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, there's, like you say, there's some hoops to go through, too. So
you bet. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Joel. We'll see you next month. And by then, I suppose it'll be 75 and we'll be out golfing.
That'd be awesome.